we're in the best real estate market now, right now, as in July 2019, that we're going to see for a long time. The market's coming back. We've got a stable government. The agents, if you can just give yourself a kick in the backside, get through what you've been through in the last 12 months, come out into spring with a positive attitude, helping people secure the home of their dreams, helping tenants secure their next property to live in, helping landlords get their mortgages paid. I think we forget, Sam, that it's the biggest decision people make in their life, and we get to hold the keys to that front door.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the best minds in the industry for the very best tips and strategies in real estate and business today. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. My guest this week is Matt LaHood, CEO of The Agency. As one of the industry's most recognised and most well-liked leaders, Matt and I caught up to talk about the agency's growth, what he's seeing in various markets around the country, and of course, I couldn't let him get away without answering our Leadership Diaries questions. In this podcast, you're going to hear Matt talk about how he got his start in sales, why straight talk will always be where it's at in real estate, and how the agency are planning to meet some of the challenges other businesses are facing right now. Matt also explains how simply caring is the ultimate skill in leadership that can lead to success in so many other areas. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you do, please share it with your industry colleagues and, of course, hit that iTunes subscribe button. For show notes and links for this episode, please visit our website, eliteagent.com/elevate. This episode is brought to you by Connect Now, who can help you to provide a greater level of service to your clients by sorting their home moving needs quickly and easily. You can find out more about becoming a Connect Now partner by emailing partnersupport@connectnow.com.au. That's it from me. On with the show. I hope you enjoy the episode. So welcome to the podcast, Matt LaHood.
Thanks, Sam, for having me over.
It's awesome to have you, and pretty timely that we've caught up now at the agency. You've just delivered your results for the June quarter and they look pretty good
despite
the downturn. And what, so 277 agents nationally now, $2.5 billion exchanged and nearly 4,500 properties under management. So what a massive 2 years for you.
No, thank you. Very excited, being humbled by the support, first of all, and the following of agents that have come from all different brands to talk to us. We see them as partners and we call them property partners. So we don't see anybody necessarily working for us. I just never liked that theory. I always work for them. The brand is the brand, but they are the brand. The agents are the brand when they're out there face to face with the clients.
Yeah, so the agency has quite a unique business model. Can you explain for the uninitiated what a property partner is and how it's different to the traditional franchise model?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, we saw about 3 years ago, Sam, the market sort of taking a path where agents don't necessarily come into the office as much. So the old sort of style office on every corner, like a McDonald's, if you like, we felt that was finishing because rents aren't paid in the office anymore. Buyers don't look in your window with an ice cream anymore because they've got the internet. So we've looked at offices as sort of hubs, like regional hubs, I guess, where people could just dock into for back-end support, sales support, mental support, coaching, sales meetings, that type of thing, not necessarily for their clients because their clients are not coming into office. People are too time poor. We've created a model where basically we can have one hub in an area but have a whole lot of agents, some working in the office, some not working in the office, that don't need to be in the office, which is really exciting because culturally it's really good because we have hot desks in our offices as well and they can come in and work. And so you're constantly seeing all new faces all the time coming, going. Not everyone's there all the time. It creates a bit of excitement because you're seeing, you know, there's always, someone's always got some story to tell.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to your Bondi office a couple of times, which is pretty spectacular. I'd want to be there all the time. In fact,
well, that one they did bags the office desks, so that we're all, our desks are full there. The hot desks, they get a run too now. But the sales agents, we've got some fantastic quality, high caliber agents in that office too, which is great.
Yeah. And so now with the consolidation of the agency Australia wide, Sell Lease Property is also part of the agency, yes. Mostly yep. there over west, but how does that fit in?
So that's a model that we'd never have an office for that model. That's a traditional, like, agents that just want to do maybe one or two sales a month. And some of them, you know, might be acting as accountants as well and also have a real estate license. So there's a lot of agents out there that just don't have the ability to come in and be part of, inverted commas, a team, but want to be represented by a brand. So that's got a tech play behind it, which a lot of the technology we're using in the agency, where it is literally completely remote. So you have the brand to use, all the facility, all the back and all the support behind it, a website, and it is affiliated with the agency. So the cross databases are great. We've just rolled that out virtually in WA is where it started. And it's been rolled out slightly into Queensland, but we're going to roll it out nationally in the next 6 to 12 months. That's just an option. We're not going to put it where the agency brand is. It'll be in completely different areas where, again, won't need to have an office there to operate out of it. You can just literally work from home or through a cafe.
Yeah, so it's sort of like different brands to appeal to different demographics,
exactly,
and
right.
different types of sellers, yep. and different types of...
Yep. And a different structure to the way it works versus the agency. So, you know, you've got either a full service model and the splits are different, or you've got a service model where you just run everything yourself but just virtually plug into the back end, where we do trust accounting and all that sort of stuff, the compliance, all the stuff that takes time away from an agent making money.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's interesting because, I mean, the agency is often described as disruptive, and obviously you've weathered this contracting market quite well. So in terms of some of the current trends, you know, you've got this consolidation trend, consolidation of back ends and things like that. So obviously technology is a big part of how you're dealing with that. Can you give us a little bit of insight sure. as to how that works?
The first thing is, for some reason, that disruption logo has been put to our brand. I never went out there, as did the other founders, sort of saying that, but it sort of seems to have just
stuck.
So yep. we run with it. But we're more disrupting at the agent level, where the technology we're constantly developing, soon to have things like, you know, signing on glass for everything in the rental side, the auctions, having, you know, the owners just sign their marketing and all their agency agreements on the iPad or iPhone. That's where we're really heading towards. We want to make it truly remote. So virtually an agent can be away on a week's leave and sign up an auction, sign up, you know, a private treaty, have the marketing done off their iPad, have all their photos booked, have all the ads approved and not actually physically see anybody. Have the owner sign off on the other end on all the ads, then go to the auction, put the hammer down, sign the contract on an iPad, transfer the funds straight into the account, send all the letters out that afternoon to the owners, to the solicitors, everything. Just make it painless. That's where we want to head.
Yeah, heading towards that perfectly frictionless.
Yeah, exactly. But there's obviously the legalities around everything, so everything will be all signed off by all the right legal teams and things. But, you know, now with these companies like DocuSign and all that, they've all been approved now to be able to do all these things. So it's really good.
Yeah, it's definitely a new world from taking your check.
Yeah, and printing out contracts and having, you know, 40 pages. If you've got 10 buyers on a property, that's, you know, 6 trees you knock down to give out contracts. It's so good just to be able to eventually sign just on iPad, then email through the signed contract, and not having to have all these printed copies of everything and a whole lot of paper stored everywhere, which you can never find when you need it.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's like that in here as well. So you've just released your property report as
yes.
well, which you do every quarter.
Every quarter, yep.
And there's some interesting trends going on in Sydney at the moment. Like, we've been talking to the auctioneers and stuff
yes.
around the country. So let's go around the country quickly. What are you seeing? So first of all, Sydney?
Sydney and Melbourne, I'll speak for both. They're sort of very similar. Clearance rates the last 4 weekends. So what are we in now, mid-July? The last 4 weekends since the election have been over 70%. The other big trend we're seeing is the investors sort of slightly going out of the market, because what I've noticed, Sam, and I followed this specifically, is that just before the election, about 6 weeks out, there was this run of investors charging into the market to sort of grandfather negative gearing, thinking that Labor was getting in and it was gone. And the complete swing has turned now. I'd literally just come out of a sales meeting an hour ago. We had about 15 open homes last weekend, and a lot of them were apartments. And all of the agents are telling me predominantly now it's first home buyers. So with that news of the Liberal government getting in, negative gearing staying. There's no rush now to buy an investment property because it's there to stay, the negative gearing. So the investors have cooled their jets. But what's happened with this new potential assistance for the first home buyers, even though it's not in yet, the first home buyers have come back into the market looking. And now we're seeing the rents have come back. Rents are dropping because the first home buyers are not renting. They're waiting to buy now. So there's a win-lose in every situation in real estate, but this is a trend we're seeing at the moment. And obviously, the banks have been told loosen the purse strings a bit. So we're seeing that now too. APRA's come out with their new structure as well. So we're seeing a whole lot of new things happen. Yeah?
It's been called, I hear, the ScoMo bounce.
Yeah, the ScoMo bounce. So I like that.
It's pretty cool.
Look, I think, whether Liberal, Labor, whatever it is what it is, but just the fact that people know what's happening, I think, is we got a Liberal government or a Labor government or whatever, and policies, right, wrong, or indifferent, some have got, you know, some good policy, someone got not so good. You know, I don't want to pick a side either way, but the fact that they've made a decision now, okay, and it's unanimous, we're not a hung parliament or a minority government. It's a way you go. He's got full endorsement to deliver. So that's a people power, right? So people wanted negative gearing to stay. You know, the pensioners didn't want the things on that affecting them. And now we're seeing the lowest interest rates. I'm 30 years in real estate next year. I've never seen a market conditions like this with interest rate so low. Now, if we get the banks down to loosening the purse strings a bit, we're going to continue to see a stable market. I don't think we'll see a boom for a while, but we'll definitely see a stable market. We don't want a boom, realistically.
Okay, what about Melbourne? So, Melbourne's still suffering a bit of a lack of stock, right?
Melbourne's still, well, Sydney and Melbourne both having a lack of stock, but the results the Melbourne team have been getting, and keep in mind too, in Melbourne right at the moment, we're actually in Albert Park and in Hawthorne, so we are in the most salubrious market. Yep. So, we're probably not seeing a regional dip if there was or anything. So I'm not really exposed to that from our brand, but I do follow the regional market. I do see regional Melbourne going strong as well, but regional Victoria. But the thing is, in our team down there, most of the properties have been selling that have been coming on. We're clearing 60 to 70% as well. They got the lack of stock probably tighter than we've seen it in Sydney, but that's sort of where it is at the moment. It's travelling quite well, Melbourne. It'll come back the same as Sydney.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people saying that it will come back come Sydney. It was awful weather there on the weekend. Sleet and God
Well,
knows
yeah,
what.
The weather, it's funny, isn't it? The weather dependent, but, you know, our team down there, we've growing it pretty quickly. We're opening Hawthorne in another week, the office there, and just some of the listings coming on. I really hope the market holds up for them because they've got some really good stock coming on now, which has been hibernating, as we said.
Are you guys involved in the block again?
Yes,
this
we
year?
Are.
You won that last year, didn't you?
No, we didn't. No, we won the year before, unfortunately.
Yeah, always a good bit
we'll
of fun,
We'll have a go
though.
This year, though. I think we're going to have a real swing.
Yeah, good, good. Gold Coast.
Gold Coast has been actually pretty flat. I think Gold Coast has that phenomenon where, you know, if Sydney, Melbourne and sort of Canberra prices drop, you tend to see people offloading some of the holiday homes and that they have up on the Gold Coast. So, there has been a lot of stock up there and it hasn't been moving. So, clearance rates have been under 50% up there. Brisbane's probably the same. I'm hearing Brisbane's coming back and it's going to come back, but I have been hearing that for about 4 or 5 years now. I'm not seeing anything to suggest that it's back yet. Look, they've gone through what Sydney and Melbourne went through in the last 2 years. They had a lot of development there, and now that stock's come off and, you know, either been sold or held. So there's not as much competition as there was on the Gold Coast and Brisbane, probably. So Gold Coast has still got stock unsold. A lot of the high rises have they're either not sold or they're not developing them now. They've put them on hold, pushed them down the road. I think the house market up there, the prestige market, probably slightly depressed still. But, you know, it's a beautiful place, beautiful part of Australia. You know, in the strong times is going to be strong. Unfortunately, when we have a market like we've had, it does suffer because it gets, you know, Sydney, Melbourne sneeze, Gold Coast gets the flu. It's just the sort of way it is, you know.
Yeah, I haven't heard it put that way before, but yeah. What about over west? Is there any good news?
West has been in depression for a while there, the market, but the rental market's coming back strong. And it was just a mining. Obviously, everybody deserted the town. They had multiple properties, sold them. But the market there, unemployment's steady. And we should see that market start to slightly climb again because there's a lot of new hotels opening in WA. I think the Ritz-Carlton's just about to roll out a cracking hotel on the river there. So there's some really smart investment happening over there at the moment. And we're noticing the arena and a lot of, like, it's the entertainment facilities over there are excellent.
Well, there's a big ad on MasterChef. I mean, you know, they had a whole week in Perth, you know, showing all the sights of Perth and how amazing Perth was.
They just had the State of Origin over there too, and that is great for PR for Australia. And Perth's such a beautiful place, Sam. I don't know if you've been over there. I've had the fortunate advantage of being involved with our team there, and I love going over there. You know, it's just a beautiful place to live. And once that either mining or any hospitality, I think, is going to be driving a lot of employment there. You put the Ritz-Carlton up on the river there, it's going to have to hire a lot of people. So I think the employment will be strong and then that market with the beautiful homes will come back.
Yeah,
the rents are going up, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, well, let's hope we've got a lot of readers and people over there in Perth.
Yeah, and the agents are so resilient over there. They've been able to cop a downturn for the last 5 years. We've got some superstars working with us. We've got lucky to have a good lot of them too that have been able to weather the market. They're very resourceful how they manage themselves in the market over there.
We found that a lot of popular stuff on Elite Agent has been by agents from the West.
Yeah, it's
like
great.
We've had some of them on the podcast and stuff like that because there's a lot to learn, I think, you know.
Yeah, look, they don't do so many auctions because the demand, but I hear a lot of demand from our team to wanting to start them up again. So it's probably something that will happen when there's multiple buyers. The minute we see multiple buyers, we'll probably see auctions return to that market.
Yeah, interesting. And what about just quickly finance? So John Callender said in the report as well that he thinks the RBA should limit his actions.
Yes.
I mean, we do have a lot of macroeconomic intervention by the government.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's up to the federal government to look at other initiatives. So what sort of things is he looking at?
Yeah, look, you just can't keep cutting the interest rates, can you? I mean,
they'll be giving us money soon.
It's going to be, they're saying, you know, it potentially might be at 0.75%. shortly. So I'm blown away when they said it was 1.5 and 1.25. I've never seen anything like this, and you probably haven't either because it hasn't been around. But
no,
I mean, the big one is the availability of credit. It was always interest rates that put the brakes on the market. We had everything happening for years, like, you know, you'd have the GST, we had 9/11, we had the war, we had the invasion of different countries, we've had Y2K bugs. Everybody said the real estate market and going to collapse because of all these dramas.
Yep.
The only time I ever saw it slow in that whole 30 years is when they put the interest rates up. Change of government comes and goes. That's only a minute to midnight sort of thing, and then goes. So there's a new phenomenon now. There's the tightening of credit, which I've never seen. But I talked to my dad, who's 80, and he reminds me of a credit squeeze they had, I think, in the late 70s. He told me it's very similar. So he's seen it before. It's quite interesting talking to that generation because they're scarred by a credit squeeze.
Mm.
And they had a credit squeeze, Sam, and 19% interest rates.
I vaguely remember
so
that. Yeah.
I'd go to work every day skipping to work. And my dad, he was going to work and he was 19% interest rate, 17%, and they couldn't get money off anyone. You know, it was beg, borrow and steal off the family or friends to get a loan. That's how you had to get a loan back sort of in the 70s and 80s. Late 80s when I first started, I do remember starting with 18% interest rates. They quickly came down to about 16 and then they 15 hovered around 12 for a long time. I remember 12%. And to see them today, it's just I don't understand it and still see we've probably got more debt. So one thing, you know, John was saying there and also too, the other initiatives are extremely important, not just keep lowering the interest. It's going to have nothing to lower soon.
Yeah. It's still not going to improve jobs, for example, is it?
No. Getting people to spend, which is the key, I guess, it's not only interest rates. If they haven't got the money to spend, like if they can't like loan to buy to build wealth and, you know, cost of living, all the other thing we're talking about, electricity bills I keep hearing on every time I turn either a talk back on or a news or something, someone's blowing up about their electricity bill.
Yep.
So those things are taking cash out of society. If you're spending $2,000 a quarter on your electricity bill, if you've got a house where you were spending $800 a quarter 5 years ago, that's $1,200 a quarter you're not spending at, you know, the fruit market or, you know, JB Hi-Fi or Harvey Norman or whatever it may be, which is pushing retail. It's pulling all restaurants. A lot of the high-end restaurants start to take a dip when people just don't have that cash to spar around, you know?
Yeah. There are a lot of other things that could be looked at.
Exactly right. That's only one lever they're pulling.
Yeah. Interesting. So we have – I'm glad we got you here, actually, because we have this other thing that we call the Leadership Diaries, where we ask leaders such as yourself a series of questions to get some insights on leadership and leading a real estate business. So are you ready for those? I know you're unprepared for them, but here we go. So what was your first job and what did it teach you?
Good question. So my first job was working for my uncle, and you're going to laugh your head off. Do you remember in the 1980s there was a boom in the city of Sydney with all these liquidation stores, the $2 shops?
Yep.
So my uncle started a lot of those.
Oh, my God.
And he rang me when I was 13. He rang mum and dad, and he goes, I need Matt to help me. He's a big bloke. Unload some trucks with all the crap on them, you know, knock off sunglasses and all these pens that used to have the colour things in the back of them. And we had all these things we were selling, and I got pulled in on a Saturday and Thursday night to help him run those shops and help him unload the trucks. He stuck me out the front to sell all the stuff. I was at Pitt Street in Sydney, right near the corner of Pitt and Park.
You were that guy.
And it was that busy. It was so busy.
Yeah.
And I learned how to work with people at 13. And my uncle said, you've got potential. Stand out there. Just be nice to people. Smile. And he said, they'll buy stuff off you. And that was my first job. And it taught me turn up, smile. I did nothing. I didn't know nothing. I was in year 10 or something. It was in year 8 or something at school. And I got the bug for selling. And, so he was an inspiration to me there. So it was my mum's brother who had those shops, and he took me under his wing. Mum liked real estate, so she used to look everything new. She'd come with me and have a look at this house. They had a few investment properties. And Dad was the largest footwear importer in Australia. He worked for Pacific Dunlop, and he had 200-300 staff underneath him. So I was always on Saturdays or weekends doing something business related. I didn't even know it. So I was either going out with dinner with Dad's clients when I was 12 and 13, sitting at the table listening to all the conversations, then hanging around with my uncle. And that learnt me to manage with people and talk to people. Good.
Are we talking Dunlop Volleys there?
Yeah, that's my dad.
That was me in the '80s. I lived in those.
Well, my dad actually is on record. If you Google John LaHood, he's on record for bringing thongs to Australia.
Thank you, John LaHood.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, so what does the first hour of your day look like, and how does it go after that? Are you like a 5 a.m. clubber?
Yeah, I'm not like promoting that sort of out there, but I get up early. I get up at 5. I have a look in my diary just to double check. Right, I'm on song for everything that day. I plan usually the whole week ahead on a Monday, but I just double check, get mentally prepared of what I'm doing through the day. Try to walk or do some activity in the morning. Do that one gym a session a week on Saturday, that's it, and I don't want to go near it again. But I find walking is good for me. I can just put the headphones on, podcast, music, talk back. Not really a set person on listening to anything particularly, and just calm myself for the day. And then if I've got an 8 o'clock appointment, I don't like to turn up at 7:59. I like to be there at 7:30 and just ready to ease into that 8 o'clock meeting.
Can you name someone that has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
I've been fortunate to see a lot of leaders and work with a lot of leaders. I guess some of the things that Obama did when he was president, just the way he galvanized his team around him was great. Obviously, worked with John McGrath for 20 years. You know, John at his peak running the business was outstanding leader. Worked with some of the best real estate leaders of their teams for a long time. Worked with a fellow called James Dank, who was amazing, you know, when he was at his peak as well. He led a team there. I learned a lot off him. My original boss was inspirational too. He told me what to do personally to be successful in real estate, not necessarily about real estate. He tuned me into life to be successful long term. So he was great. And then obviously internally, you know, people say their family and things, but I had an uncle that was very successful. Dad was very successful in their own ways, you know. Success is different to other people. I'll just learn a lot by being around John Simon. I've done work for John Aussie Home Loans for years. I think he's amazing. He's been able to stay at the top of the tree for a long time. And I was lucky enough to be his agent. His nephew, James, had a lot to do with them the early days when they weren't Aussie Home Loans. So I was there when they were growing and just made great connections there. I've got a lot of friends that are CEOs of big operations that are really just normal people, which is good.
Sounds like you've been fortunate to learn from some amazing people.
I have. I'm a combination of a whole lot of people, I guess, not one specific.
Yep. So you take, you know, and I guess this is the advice for people that might be listening, is to take the bits that resonate with you from.
Yeah, look, my dad's really good with, I went to work experience with him and watched him run meetings and things like that. He was very inclusive in his meetings, not the smartest person in the room. Actually used to sit up there and say, and he technically was the smartest person in the room, but he never ever thought that, but he'd learn a lot off his team. And I learned that, and I didn't even know I was learning. I was like 13, but I could see him running meetings. And if somebody said something that was out of line or something, he'd take them out later on and say, hey, listen, just next time. So it was very inclusive, which I think if you're a leader, you've got to be inclusive. You've got to listen to your people.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your favorite question to ask someone in a job interview, and what does it tell you about them?
I like to find out what people are doing in their personal lives. I'm not a big one on, like, where do you want to be in 5 years and all this sort of cliched stuff, because most people, to be honest, not sure where they want to be in 12 months. Or they're going to come to you with a practiced answer about where they want to be in 5 years because they know that's a standard question.
Standard question, yeah.
I'm actually like to ask them where they are in their personal life a lot. And ask them and say, look, tell me about yourself personally. You know, what's been your journey over the last 2 or 3 years? Because history sort of tells you a lot, you know, and they don't have to be anything particularly. I like to see people that I've sort of been able to work with are people that have been behind the eight ball, that have come out and really made something of themselves because they've got desire to succeed. They might have been in a divorce or a bad relationship or had a child that had a sickness, or they might have had a bad habit they've overcome. And those sort of people are the ones that I find that I always ask, tell me about your last 3 or 4 years in your life. And that gives me a really good sense of where they're going. It's easy to ask someone a question, where do you want us to be in 5 years? You can make that up, really. Yeah. I'd want to see where you'd been versus where you want to be.
What's the best way, do you think, for someone to get a new employee or team member to understand the culture of your business?
I think it definitely starts at the top. So with recruiting, we always lay that out as to how we work, how I work, how the management team work. We work for you. That's what we tell everybody. We're not expecting you to kill yourself, and we don't want you to be married to the agency. We want you to be married or have your partner at home, and that's the most important thing in our world, is our outside of real estate. So they know that's the culture, first of all. We then explain to them about how we operate in terms of the real estate space, that our clients are the first and foremost important thing in the business. So we do nothing ever to compromise a vendor, buyer, tenant, landlord. The next most important people are us, as in the agents, the staff, the property managers, because if we don't have them, we're not looking after them, and you aren't looking after each other, well, then you don't have a culture. And then the least important, in our view, is the management team are there because we can manage. We don't need to be bumped our tyres up and stuff. And, you know, we're there. We're not looking for accolades. We take the falls and cop the crap, but don't take the great stuff when it comes out. We dish out all the good stuff back to the team. But that's how it sort of, if you got to be able to understand that as a leader.
I do remember last time we did a podcast with you, you were talking about being in the trenches with your team, because there's no point being, and I know you frequently do show up to opens and auctions and things
one.
Like that.
Well, I was at the sales meeting this morning because I just try to get to as many meetings or drop in unannounced. I like to drop in unannounced better than anything, walk through the offices. I think my saying probably-
Is there still donuts? There still donuts?
Cupcakes.
Cupcakes.
Gone a bit healthier, man. Yeah. Gone from deep fried to baked, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do that. They're just sort of breaks we have sometimes, you know, when we've got the team unannounced together. But this is not a business where you can be in a control room pushing buttons as a leader. And there's a lot of leaders that think they can do that in real estate. oh, I'll just get everyone else to go and do everything. The minute you do that, in my view, you've lost the marketplace because the market's changing weekly. And if you're a leader and you're leading people into the trenches, if it's up this week, down next week, up this week, down next week, how can you advise your team what to do or your leadership team what to do that week or month and what the trend is if you're not actually out there? And when you hear it, it's too late. Like if you hear from somebody what's happened, that was 2 weeks ago. So best way to do it is turn up to the auctions, go into a few opens, stand there, listen to the buyers, go and listen to what your rental team are doing, look how many tenants are turning up to view properties, hear what the tenants are saying, hear what the buyers are saying, see what the problems are with finances and all that sort of stuff. But I like to say it's hand-to-hand combat, it's body contact sport, it's all that sort of stuff. It's not one where you can sit in a room and go, I wonder how the team are going. I'll push a computer and see how many sales I've made for the month. It's not Amazon.
What's the worst advice you've ever heard given to someone starting their career in real estate?
Worst advice I ever heard was, this wasn't from my original boss, but other agents that joined me from where I was working were told just to fill up the owner's open houses with anyone's names that come in, tell them there was 10 people when there was two, and just do everything that real estate's had a bad name for. Worst advice was to not be straight up with the owner, because a lot of agents haven't developed the skill of being able to be brutally honest. And if you're not brutally honest in this business, it's going to cost you long term. You might gain short term. I found most of my clients have stuck with me solid because I've been blunt with them from the beginning. If they're not going to get the price, I tell them beforehand, don't put it on the market and risk losing the listing. Same thing with people that come to work with us. I'm blunt about, are they going to make it or not? I'm going to see someone come in and drown under our leadership. It's not going to work. Worst advice is tell people the wrong thing and think that it's going to work long term.
Yeah. So the strategy is be honest.
Yeah. And then buyers are buyers. Like, you know, I'm a buyer. I'm a buyer. You're a buyer. You lie to buyers. Someone's going to lie to you. If you haven't been through the process of buying and selling, it's very hard to understand emotionally attached people get to properties. And they're coming, they're bringing their mum and dad and they're talking about it. They're looking over in their spare time. They're showing their work colleagues, we're going to this auction on the weekend. And people don't understand the brand damage they're doing to their brand by saying, oh, who had that? Oh, the agency had that and they told us it was going to sell for this and it sold for something and they were never going to sell it at that price. And look, we can't help competition. The competition is competition. But if you honestly know that a property is going to sell for more, I always tell people that this is where it's probably going to go for a lot more than we were thinking. And then you get so much more credibility doing that, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. What does leadership at home look like?
Leadership at home. So being present is one thing. My kid's 20. So I got Luke 20, Emma 18. Just got to know when to hold them and when to fold them with the kids these days. So I don't come into the house and aspire to be, I'm home, everyone part the Red Seas. This is not how it works because my wife is the machine.
Yeah.
Look, she's got them when I wasn't there in the early days doing opens and things like that through all the football, tennis, soccer, netball, dancing. She did all that grind. Now they're in the workspace and finishing school space. That's where I've come in. So she's relied on me for that, which is what I'm good at, I guess, is career building and helping people. So the kids are really swung towards me with what do I do here, Dad, career-wise? What do I do here leaving school? What do I do here with this employer? What do I do here with that staff member or whatever? So leadership's about being present when you're there at home. That's how I see it. And also understanding your partner's needs. My wife's been amazing I've been married for 25 years. She's been amazing for 25 of them. But she's been very unselfish as well because when I get home, phone keeps ringing and people drop over and, you know, it's just how my life has sort of been. And she's been very accepting of all of that. But she knows, she's been with me so long now that she knows that what real estate is. There's a very high divorce rate in this industry. The reason there is because they don't normally explain to their partner what the industry is when they're initially starting to either meet or go out for the first time. And it's an unforgiving game because people ring you on Saturday night and they want to see a property and exchange a contract and you're on commission only and you're going out to the movies. I've had plenty of those nights and my wife has said, look, you know, you go to the movie, I'll meet you there and I'm just going to pick up a contract and a check. Do you remember sitting at Fox Studios with a contract and a check in the car? Yeah. And I gave the check to her to put it in a handbag so he didn't leave it in the car. So you've got to have a partner's understanding, but you've got to be there when you're there. That's something I think I'm pretty good at. When I walk in, just because the phone rings, I don't always answer it because I'm home. If I'm talking to the kids and giving them direction, I'm there with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So I know, like, you're quite unique in that, I mean, you are coming up to 30 years in the industry and you're a leader that has definitely walked all the walks in real estate. Is there any advice that you would give to your younger self or anything that you would do more quickly?
Look, it's not easy being a leader. The thing with me, Sam, is I never actually saw myself as a leader. I've had a very unusual career where I just wanted to be a good real estate agent, build a nice living doing real estate. I thought it was a good industry where you could be out of the office, meet people, help them get what they want. You know, it's such a charge when you sell a property for somebody and they're kissing you and they're like sending you bottles of champagne. They're sending you their friends' houses to sell. That's really exhilarating. And a buyer says to you, looks you in the eye and says, you told me everything I needed to know. I'm giving you this house back to sell in 5 years. I've had a whole career full of that stuff, which is great. I must have been good managing owners' expectations and leading that process, which then helped me lead agents to advise them what to do. So I think that's how I sort of started because I was getting good results. People said, what are you doing? Can you tell me a bit about it? We want to hear from you. And it sort of just grew like that a bit. But then other people around me said, Matt, you know what you're doing. You're good at telling people and coaching them how to do it. So it became coaching turned into leadership. And I never, ever wanted to be a leader or a sales manager. And everybody said to me, I'll come with you if you're going to run it, or I'll come with you, I'll do this if you're going to be there, or I'll come and work with you, I'll move from that real estate if you're going to be there. So I actually started to reflect on what I was actually doing and asking the people close to me, what is it do you think? So I need to be knowing what I'm doing that people want. And they said, the biggest thing they said is you actually care about them. You're not actually, I don't think I'm that great at anything particular, but they said you actually care about them personally. Now, that's probably the biggest advice I can give to anybody because I cared about my owners and I'm vicious when it comes to my owners and buyers. If anyone ever makes a complaint about me, I think I probably had one in 30 years, 2,000 properties, and it wasn't probably my fault at the end of the day because I didn't go out to ever offend anyone or hurt anyone or rip anyone off. And I've ended up, if there's anyone not happy, I've told them don't pay me or pay me just whatever you want to pay me. Those things of how I've run my whole career. And with people working with us, I'm not happy if they're personally not happy. I don't care about number of sales and all that. That'll happen. If people saying, oh, get rid of them, they're only making one sale a month. Well, that's irrelevant for me. If they're only making one sale a month, there's a problem that we haven't coached them on to get them to three or four.
Well, you have an amazing detector on when things are wrong with people. even I know that. So
thanks for that. You can pick people's energy. I don't know whether that comes from just being around people a long time. You can walk through an office. That's why I like walking through the office. I see people got their heads down, they got a black cloud over their head. The best thing you can sometimes do is say, hey, what are you up to? And they go, oh, I've got this, come and have a coffee. And then I send them back to their desk and they're skipping back to work just by someone cared about having a coffee with them. We're so connected today with internet, emails, texts, all this stuff, but we're so disconnected. People sitting in offices 2 desks away sending emails to each other. I find that hilarious. Yeah. I'm old school. Yeah. I'd get up and go, hey, listen, Sam, I just thought I'd show you this. You know, people sit in offices with headphones and these days it is a different world. But, you know, there's no substitute for care. You can't coach care factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think if you could boil your leadership down to one thing, that's probably it, Ken.
Yeah, I think so. And you can't get involved with everyone's life because, you know, I'd be rescuing people every day of the week if I did. But I've got to be hard too, but care too. So sometimes you got to, there's an old saying, we've heard it when we're small, you've got to be cruel to be kind. There is a bit of that in me too, but people know it's coming from the right space. all I'm interested in with this business, it'll make money, it'll get to profit, it'll do whatever it's doing. But if the people aren't right, they're not happy, they're not skipping to work, I might as well pack up and go home, because that's really reality of it for me. I don't want to be making money, shooting the lights out, and I've got a whole group of people that are miserable. You know, it's not good. And that's where most leaders lose the focus. It's get, you know, Richard Branson does this well. The people come first. If I haven't got my people right, they can't serve the clients. And that's how it's got to be. It's the real estate industry. It's a lonely industry too, because it is a silo sort of job. You're out there doing your opens and everything. You don't really have anyone to sort of bounce off. That's why having a strong team with good leadership is really important.
This will probably be my last question to you, but if there was anything that you could change about the real estate industry right now, what would it be?
I'd like to have one real estate body, because I'm a national business, that just has one rule. So you fly into Perth, it's the same rule as Brisbane, Queensland, sorry, it's the same rule as New South Wales, it's the same rule as Victoria. Same with the Office of Fair Trading and that sort of operation. It should be just the same rule for the industry. There's a lot of good young people getting lost to the industry because they don't have a career path on the way through. I know something you guys have certainly done is start to, you know, generate future leaders and that type of thing. But it's a hard industry for young people coming in, especially commission only and all those types of things. It's very difficult to have a career path. So building a career path for future real estate people, either a cadetship, either sponsored by the government, would be a good thing to promote, you know, industry, so real estates aren't burdened with having to pay, you know, a wage on somebody that might not make a sale for 12 months or 2 years, where it's just not economically sustainable. That could be a grant, like something along the lines of that would work really well.
Any closing tips or advice?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks so much again, Sam. You're doing a great job too with the lead agent. So, first thing for having me here. Look, I think we're in the best real estate market now, right now, as in July 2019, that we're going to see for a long time. The market's coming back. We've got a stable government. The agents, if you can just give yourself a kick in the backside, get through what you've been through in the last 12 months, come out into spring with a positive attitude, helping people secure the home of their dreams, helping tenants secure their next property to live in, helping landlords get their mortgages paid. We've got the best environment in terms of the whole of Australia, really, with unemployment. We're in a beautiful country. We've got stable government now. We've got the lowest interest rates in 30 years. There's a lot of really positive things. There's always going to be somebody buying and selling. We used to say years ago, somebody told me there's always a hatch match or a dispatch, so that which will drive real estate. So a hatch being a newborn, a match being a wedding or and a get together, or in a dispatch being unfortunately someone leaving us. So there's always going to be that in real estate. So that's probably one of the main reasons I got in. Everyone needs a roof over their head. But I think we forget, Sam, that it's the biggest decision people make in their life, and we get to hold the keys to that front door. The trust is phenomenal. You go down the local police station down here at North Sydney, the local sergeant, who would be considered one of the trusted people inside, doesn't have the keys to someone's front door. We do. We have the keys to someone's hopes, dreams, life's journey in our hands. I'm encouraging everybody to think of it at that level, that you've got that trust. You've got the key to their front door. That just doesn't happen.
And care, right?
And care. Care about it. Yeah, care about their journey. It's you're in people's lives for a long time in this industry, and you've got to think like it's not a short-term transaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Lord, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you very much, Sam. Good on you.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.